Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. Lately, we've had plenty of chances to look around us and see strangers, people who look, act, or think differently than we do. In the face of those differences, revolutionary love would see no stranger, no division between us and them. But it's hard, and sometimes grieving how hard it really is helps us discover the love we already have. In this episode, you'll hear Melissa Locke, Callie Pliego, and Valerie Kaur, whose book, See No Stranger, inspired this conversation. See the episode page for how to connect with her work. Here's Melissa.
When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? That was the opening question of Amanda Gorman's soaring inaugural poem on Wednesday this week. Her carefully chosen words for President Biden's inauguration went on to hold hope right alongside harsh realities of a pandemic that has now claimed almost 500,000 of our American lives. It went on to imagine possibility in the midst of the disparity, division, reckoning, and reconciling that looms so large. 4 years ago, Valerie Kaur, the inspiration for our current fabric conversation called No Stranger, asked a similar question. She wondered, is this the darkness of the tomb or the darkness of the womb? She wasn't referring to one person, one election, but to a much larger struggle and transition. I found it sobering when I recently heard her reminding people that this is not a rhetorical question. It's a real open one. Something can be born out of our pain, but only if enough of us choose to opt in to the labor. It rings true. I'm Melissa Locke. Welcome to this exploration asking, what is it like to opt in to the labor of revolutionary love? The kind of love that Jesus taught, told stories about, and embodied in his living and dying. Last week, Greg introduced wonder as where it all starts. When love gets hard, and it will, and when we forget about love, and we will, we can always turn and return to wonder. We're practicing this habit. Whenever we see an other, we choose in our mind to say, cousin, sibling, you are not a stranger to me, but part of me I do not yet know. I wonder. And like any habit, our ability to wonder will grow with practice and time and be much easier in some circumstances than others. But opting into wondering about ourselves and others, even when it is difficult, is a practice we can return to with each new breath. Really. And I want us to hold on to that. Overall, but also and especially right now, as we continue together, as you listen and as I share. And here's why. As you practice wonder, you're going to start noticing and listening to the deeper stories. Ah, there's more going on here, isn't there? You'll be saying. And soon you'll run into pain. You'll also run into today's main character, grief. Grief is different from wonder, and so are anger and joy that we will be exploring in the coming weeks. Grief, anger, joy, all parts of love, like wonder. But unlike wonder, these are tender, risky, vulnerable parts of being human that we don't choose as much as allow. You are brave to even push play on a podcast called Opting Into Grief, frankly. You are practicing. You're practicing allowing grief to come in and visit, even a little bit. And I'm coming to believe that when it comes to revolutionary love, a little can go a surprisingly long way. The poet Rumi helps us understand these harder-to-welcome visitors to our inner selves with his poem, The Guest House. Listen to these last lines. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Can we be grateful even for grief? Stephen Colbert and journalist Anderson Cooper did a rare thing. they sat down to publicly talk about their grief. Stephen had lost his father and two brothers at age 10 and describes his life ever since as being defined by that loss. Here is Anderson Cooper.
You told an interviewer that you have learned to, in your words, love the thing that I most wish had not happened.
I remember
you went on. You went on to say, "What punishments of God are not gifts?" Do you really believe that?
Yes. It's a gift to exist. It's a gift to exist, and with existence comes suffering. There's no escaping that. And I guess I'm either a Catholic or a Buddhist when I say those things, because I've heard those from both traditions. But I didn't learn it that I was grateful for the thing I most wish hadn't happened, is that I realized it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, and it's an oddly guilty feeling.
I don't want it to have happened.
I want it to not have happened.
Right.
But if you are grateful for your life, which I think is a positive thing to do,
yeah.
Not everybody is,
right.
And I'm not always, mm-hmm. But it's the most positive thing to do, then you have to be grateful for all of it. You can't pick mm-hmm. and choose what you're grateful for. And then, so what do you get from loss? You get awareness of other people's loss.
Well, that's true. Empathy.
Which allows you to connect with that other person.
Right.
Which allows you to love more deeply and to understand what it's like to be a human being, if it's true that all humans suffer.
Right.
And so, at a young age, I suffered something so that by the time I was in serious relationships in my life with friends or with my wife or with my children, is that I have some understanding that everybody is suffering. And however imperfectly, acknowledge their suffering and to connect with them and to love them in a deep way that not only accepts that all of us suffer, but also then makes you grateful for the fact that you have suffered so that you can know that about other people. And that's what I mean. It's about the fullness of your humanity. Mm-hmm. What's the point of being here and being human if you can't be the most human you can be? I'm not saying best, because you're going to be a bad person and a most human. I want to be the most human I can be. Mm-hmm. And that involves acknowledging and ultimately being grateful for the things that I wish didn't happen, because they gave me a gift.
I want to be clear. What Stephen Colbert and what I am talking about is very different from the dismissive, if well-meaning, platitudes you might have heard. Everything happens for a reason. She's in a better place. As if pain is done to us as some kind of lesson or test of faith by a game-playing God. No. Grief does not dismiss pain or happen on a timeline either. It doesn't say, oh, it's not so bad. Can we move on now? Why be so negative? Don't worry, be happy. Grief doesn't shortcut around the pain of loss. It doesn't ask you to seek out pain or wallow in it either, letting it become stuck in you and you in it. Quite the contrary. Opening up to allow grief is a necessary and freeing embrace of suffering, even suffering as part of being fully human. With other humans, and with the divine, however we might understand that. Grief is a practice that says people and life matter. I matter. What I love matters. And it says there are no strangers. We are together in all the joy and the suffering that comes with this gift of getting to exist, as Colbert said, of loving and being loved. I had the privilege of speaking again with Callie Pliego on Tuesday morning this week. She's been grounding us with her stories of revolutionary love. We opened our conversation with these words about grief from Valerie Kaur.
Grief is the price of love. Loving someone means that one day there will be grieving. They will leave you, or you will leave them. The more you love, the more you grieve. Loving someone also means grieving with them. It means letting their pain and loss bleed into your own heart. When you see that pain coming, you may want to throw up the guardrail, sound the alarm, raise the flag, but you must keep the borders of your heart porous in order to love well. Grieving is an act of surrender.
Welcome, Callie. Thank you for being with me in this and us.
Hi, good morning.
So I texted you this morning just to remember why I invited you to be sharing stories through this conversation. And I had a hunch, I guess, maybe that it would help us stay grounded in the real and in how revolutionary love can really be. It's really more and more helping me shed any illusions of love being sentimental or some kind of like soft romantic thing, nice thing. And that's hard. And I'm really grateful for it, I think. But it's sinking in that love is dangerous business, as Valerie Kaur said. In that piece we just heard her read, it's from the beginning of her book, or her chapter about grief. And she says how we must keep the borders of our heart porous in order to love well. And when I think about the work that you're doing now, it seems as though if grief is the price of love, that you've been loving well.
Yeah. I feel that too. I've recently come to the realization that my experience at work is almost constant grief.
So tell us a little bit about where you work and what your job is.
So I'm not sure how to frame it. I did work for the police department until a recent budgeting decision to remove my position from the police department and put me into another city department. But hopefully the future of my work will still remain embedded within the police department, even if it's not the police department that's paying my check. So my title is crime prevention specialist, and what that does is it puts me in touch with a lot of residents of the neighborhood that I serve, which is the Fort Phillips neighborhoods. And in particular, I am in touch with a lot of crime victims and their families. So my grief is theirs. It's that porous heart that I soak in their pain. And I think that I love them. I love the community so much that their loss is my loss. And so I really feel it deeply when, you know, bad things happen, when people are hurting.
Like Colbert and Cooper, Callie was willing to share some of her grief stories. The ones that first came up for her were those related to her work with the Minneapolis Police Department. You will hear a couple of them next, and I want to give you a heads up. They're tough. They include violence that has happened in our city, including to young people. If you need to pause and tune in at a different time or place, please, please do. People are hurting. And in these stories, I'm inviting you to allow the pain of the people you'll hear about to visit you. I'm asking you to practice allowing grief to have a little more space in you. You may be saying grief is already a very close presence, a heavy one with me personally right now. And I want to tell you, you are not alone. You might not be feeling much of anything. You might feel pretty numb as you listen. You're not alone. You might feel overwhelmed with grief, your own, others, and the world's. You are not alone. You might be feeling resolve and strength. You might be ready to show up perfectly imperfect for whatever it takes. you're not alone. If you are a bunch of these and more in some kind of messy tangle, you are definitely not alone. It's all okay. So take a breath and be with me, Callie, and the people in her stories. All of them, part of you that you may not yet know. No strangers, including in yourself. Notice your own reactions as you listen, and set judgment aside by returning to wonder with each new breath.
The first story I want to tell is of an incident that started with a man, the suspect, who was high on some drugs, ran out of a house in East Phillips and carjacked a car. And this was in 2019, before carjackings went crazy. Fled in the car down 17th Avenue at a very high rate of speed. Hung a left onto Lake Street, and in doing that, hit two pedestrians. And the pedestrians were teenagers who had recently visited La Michoacana and were eating ice cream. It was a brother and a sister. And the impact slammed them through the bakery window on 17th and Lake. The boy ended up all the way at the cash register and had some injuries, and the girl actually didn't make it through the window. She was slammed up against part of the steel window frame. So she fell in a hump at the base of the window on the sidewalk. The driver continued, and the engine started to be on fire. And so he had to be pulled out of the car by cops and rescued. The boy and the girl were attended to by officers as well. One officer was telling me his experience. He was with the girl, and he was moment by moment telling me what he experienced. And it was very, there was a lot of pain in what he went through. And it was evident when he was telling me the story. Details like he couldn't believe that she was hit so hard that her earrings fell out of her ears, and they were laying there on the sidewalk, and he could remember seeing them laying there on the sidewalk, and telling me that her breathing was agonal, which I learned what that meant, but basically led him to believe she was going to die right there. Mm-hmm. I asked the officer if he planned to talk to a chaplain or process any of the experience that he had, and he just kind of shrugged it off and acted like that wasn't important. You know, and so my grief is centered on the family and of these this brother and sister, and you know, everything that they had to go through in the aftermath of this. Thankfully, both of the kids survived this. But it also is kind of presents in worry for my coworkers and their well-being. And, you know, the threat of not feeling the pain and not processing the grief, and what, you know, how that could harm.
What are you noticing? What do you feel, and where do you feel it? Give yourself permission to feel any feelings. There are no right ones or wrong ones. At first, I felt fear that this happened right where I live and drive and where friends live. Also, my face got a little hot with shame, I think, that I hadn't even heard the story. I felt sad about some people that I've recently longed to share a hug with during hard times and couldn't. I felt my heart sink down into my guts, imagining that phone call that those parents got about their kids. And then I thought about the person who had to make that phone call and wondered how many others have they had to make like that. I wondered if Callie had expected to develop empathy, even affinity and worry for the officers who in some ways embody what she is fighting to change. I hadn't considered the driver, but Callie told me about her grief for him and the community gripped by cycles of heroin addiction, and her own sense of helplessness in the face of it. Who in the story feels least or most like a stranger to you? What do you wonder about them? Valerie Kaur wrote, "You don't have to know someone to grieve with them. You grieve with them in order to know them." Callie shared one more story.
I tried to tell this story yesterday and I couldn't get through it without crying.
Yeah.
So in November of 2019 or early December, there was an incident that was in police language was an Operation 100. That means it got a lot of resources, police officers and different units and hostage negotiation and attention from the entire department. And what happened was a divorced dad was showing up for his pickup time. His two young boys were playing in the snow, waiting for their dad to come.
To their house.
To their house, in their front yard. The dad showed up and shot each of the kids in the front yard and then went into the house and shot his wife and then shot himself.
Take a breath. Notice what you're feeling again and where are you feeling it. Whatever it is, let it be. Let it be there. Breathe through it. If you aren't quite sure, that's okay. Take note of whatever you can. And keep breathing.
So where this occurred, there's a high-rise tower nearby with a lot of elderly and vulnerable people that live in the high-rise tower. And for those apartments that were situated on the, you know, the correct side of the building, they could just look out their window and see the front yard, the scene. So, you know, neighbors, there's a sober living house just a couple doors down. Men, you know, in recovery from addiction that witnessed, so a couple of those guys witnessed this as well. One of them was a 911 caller. And, you know, so there's the obvious tragic loss of life of four individuals. And then there's all of the ripples of the grief that like go out from there. The people who saw it while it happened, the people who saw it afterwards, the people who like that is a, every time they look at their, that house now, it's a scar in the neighborhood. And, couple days, maybe a couple weeks after this event, I was able to coordinate a meeting, a neighborhood meeting, and, you know, flyered and made sure that people knew about it and came to connect. I called it a healing session. And I know that the police department, the officers and people who I work with closely, like, I think sometimes they don't really know what to do with me because I'm so emotional and kind of more bent towards that than the hardening. But they went along with my plans for some reason. They had faith in me, I guess, to handle this appropriately. So we went.
Did they come with you?
Yeah. We had a community room in that high-rise tower, and people who were neighbors on the block and people who live in the high-rise tower came down and had a chance to get their questions answered from the police department, like the facts, because people, you know, really had a lot of questions. So they got to hear the factual sort of accounting of what happened. And then I led them in an exercise where everybody got a small rock and we had markers. And so they, you know, sitting at their tables and talking about their emotions, I asked them to write down a word or a phrase or draw a picture on the rock that represented what they're feeling. And then we collected the rocks. And I was able to give those rocks then to the surviving grandparents, with a sort of a message saying that this is from the community, that we had done this session and, that we're grieving with you. So the sergeant who delivered the rocks to the grandparents, you know, let me know that their gratitude was felt deeply. And yeah,
Callie gave people permission to feel and space to grieve together. Unfelt, unwitnessed emotions are not benign. Ignore them and they don't go away. There are harmful ripple effects of pain when it isn't felt and moved through. There are also ripple effects, healing ones, when people grieve together, each in their own ways and in their own time, but together. Here's what Valerie Kaur says about grief. Grief does not come in clean stages. It is more like the current of a river sweeping us into new emotional terrain, twisting and turning unexpectedly. In one moment we need to cry and rage, in another we feel nothing at all. And in another, we feel a sense of acceptance until we find ourselves one day sobbing on the steering wheel of a car as a song plays on the radio. Grief has no end, really. There is no fixing it, only bearing it. The journey is often painful, but suppressing grief is what causes the real damage. Depression, loneliness, addiction, and violence. When we are brave enough to sit with our pain, it deepens our ability to sit with the pain of others. It shows us how to love them.
Valerie inspired sort of a vision for me as it relates to my job. And this kind of, this example or the story that I told is the vision. But I wondered what it would be like to include grieving together as a Black club activity. You know, we traditionally suggest Black clubs to build community around sort of more festive things, National Night Out, you know, things like that. But I think, especially in my neighborhoods where grief is such a part of every day, it feels like a natural progression or a natural flow of community to enter into that space together, where I think culturally, as in the United States, our culture of the United States, if there is such a thing, is so much about grief is private, or should be private, and
or should be kind of moved through kind of quickly, at least.
Yeah, there's all this pressure and all this judgment that's unnecessary, and unhelpful. And I think what would be helpful is this vision is, you know, building up community around it all, you know, joy, grief, festive, everyday, you know, mundane, it doesn't matter. But the point is the community.
Do you think it's true that when we can sit with our own pain, that our capacity grows to sit with other people's pain?
I do. The image that I have is of the comfort zone. Incorporating the experience of pain into the comfort zone, bringing that in, being able to sit with it, is training ground for, you know, not having the tendency to judge or rush when other people around us experience pain and grief. There's a settledness, I think.
To stay with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stay with it. Keep the borders of your comfort zone porous. Practice this week. When you see someone unfamiliar, instead of seeing them as a stranger, say in your mind, cousin, sibling, friend, I don't know yet. I wonder what losses you have experienced. I wonder what you're grieving. Callie's love for trust-filled communities and connection has brought her into a tough job and some painful places. But by keeping her heart open, she's learning what is needed for healing, and she's finding ways to act in solidarity with the community to realize it for everyone. I am thankful for Callie's courage not only to share her stories of grief related to her work, but also for her presence in that work, in the messy labor of reimagining public safety in our city, in a way that sees no strangers. It's needed. So, what do you love? What labor does it draw you toward? None of us knows where opting into love will bring us. We do know that it will bring grief. When it comes, stay with it. Grief doesn't need fixing, treating, or healing. Grief is the healing. When it comes to visit, opt in. Allow grief to do its healing and connecting work in you and around you. Listen to Amanda Gorman's closing inaugural words and let them give you a glimpse of what is possible when you and I opt in together to revolutionary love, grief, and all.
In every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country, our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
This is a conversation worth sharing. We'd invite you to share the podcast and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. And, new during No Strangers, connect Sunday mornings on Zoom for music and community-created breakout room experiences. Because Fabric isn't just an interesting podcast, it's a community discovering how to live life woven deeply. Thanks for being part of it.